This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org. Hi, welcome everyone. Thank you so much for being here tonight. My name is Aaron Levy. I'm the executive director here at Slot, and thank you so much for sharing your evening with us. It's really an honor and a gift to have Indrani, Eugene Braverock, G.K. Reid, and Eduardo Cadava here with us tonight. I'd like to begin by recognizing the land we're gathered on, and to pay deep respect to the Lenape people, their elders and ancestors, past, present, and future. I acknowledge and offer deep gratitude to this Lenape land and the water that supports us. As we're gathered here right now, together, I invite you to join me in that acknowledgement, that respect, and that gratitude. So for those of you who are new to Slot, we're a volunteer organization, a volunteer network, and we've been here for over 17 years. We've worked in collaboration over that time with innumerable organizations, communities, institutions, and artists, always at the intersection of the arts and humanities, social justice, and public culture. Our mission is to facilitate dialogue about urgent social and cultural issues, and we believe passionately in the power of the arts and the power of dialogue to drive cultural change. We hope that you'll stay connected with us. If you haven't been to this organization before or to our website, we encourage you to use the innumerable resources that you can find online. We're also recording tonight's program for the web, and so we hope that you'll spread the word about that resource when it becomes available, and if you have a cell phone, that you can quietly silence it. So tonight marks the opening of Kim Kardashian is Dead and Other Stories, and we're thrilled that you're here to celebrate with us. The exhibition explores diverse approaches to raising awareness of issues of social justice. It also considers the effects of the transformation of persons into images, of the commodification, even self-commodification, of celebrity, and the resulting creation and destruction of celebrity subjectivity. As Guy Debord presciently remarked in 1967 in the Society of the Spectacle, today governmental powers personalize themselves as superstars and pseudo-stars. The stars of consumption similarly campaign for recognition as pseudo-powers over life. So we hope this exhibition and tonight's conversation will be useful in unpacking all of the contradictions, the complicities, but also the promises of celebrity today. Kim Kardashian is Dead and Other Stories is presented in partnership with the Penn Social Justice and Arts Integration Initiative. You can learn more about that initiative online at philajustice.org. It's been organized by Eduardo Cadava, who I'll introduce briefly, G.K. Reid, who's taking a video of the evening's program, and myself. And we want to give special thanks to the School of Arts and Sciences at Penn, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, and the Kiba Kids Foundation and Tel Ki Ganesan as well for his support and their support. I'm going to now briefly introduce our featured guest before turning it over to Eduardo Cadava. Eduardo is the board president of Slot and a professor of English at Princeton University. He'll be offering some introductory remarks and a curatorial kind of framework as well. Our speakers will speak for about 30 minutes or so, and then we'll open it up to kind of a more intimate conversation with all of you. So Eugene Braverock is a proud Blackfoot born and raised on the Kenai Blood Reserve in the Rocky Mountain foothills of southern Alberta. Braverock acquired stunt skills as a performer in Buffalo Bill's Wild West show at Euro Disney in Paris and set up a stunt boot camp to train other Native American performers for the Oscar-winning film The Revenant. He recently starred in Wonder Woman alongside Gal Gadot. Braverock requested to rework his character, Chief, to remove Hollywood stereotypes and to feel more authentic. And in so doing, he paved the way for his transition to superhero stardom. Indrani Pal Chaudhuri is a multidisciplinary artist, a photographer, a social advocate, a leading director, and a voice for female empowerment, and a friend and colleague of ours who we've come to know so well in these last weeks. Indrani was discovered and mentored by David Bowie and Iman, who commissioned her first album art for Heathen and her directorial debut, Valentine's Day, starring Bowie. Indrani helped launch the careers of Beyoncé and Lady Gaga by photographing the art for their debut albums, the cover of Dangerously in Love, and the Fame Monster, respectively. She's also worked with Kate Winslet, Keanu Reeves, Kanye West, Will Smith, among many others, many of whom are also documented on these walls. So I want to thank you again for being here. I'm going to turn over to Eduardo, and I want to especially thank Indrani, Eugene Brave Rock, and G.K. Reed as well.
I'd like to add my welcome to Aaron's and to express my gratitude also for Indrani's collaboration with us. For all of her kindness and generosity in helping to put this project together. It's a kind of surprising project for us, and I think one of the reasons that we took it up is precisely because it surprised us. And we're very glad that SLOT will be its home for the next 2 months. I also want to thank G.K. Reed for his help with the installation, his presence, and also Eugene Brave Rock for his presence as well. As you've read, as you walk through the exhibition, Kim Kardashian is Dead and Other Stories is meant to encourage conversations about how artists, thinkers, and activists can mobilize fame, fantasy, advertising, aesthetics in the direction of issues of social justice, to provoke discussion, to inspire social change. And one of the things that this exhibition tries to do is bring together different experiments that Indrani engaged in order to try and do this, in order to try and inscribe celebrity and fame within these efforts to move people toward thinking about social justice. The exhibition takes its title, Kim Kardashian is Dead, from a project that was sponsored by the Alicia Keys Keep a Child Alive project. And what she did is, and what Indrani did is, she gathered together several celebrities. They positioned themselves in a coffin with their arms mostly crossed, and then depending on which celebrity it was, Kim Kardashian is dead, Alicia Keys is dead, etc. They would remain dead. The project was called Digital Death, so they would remain dead until their fans would buy life, which is to say, I should say that they remain dead, which is to say entirely off social media until their fans would buy life, which is to say contribute to a fund to help families with AIDS in Africa. And the target for each of the celebrities, I think, was $1 million for each one. I think Kim raised that in 4 or 5 days. And so this is as one of the examples of the projects that she's engaged in, which again mobilize celebrity in the direction of issues of social justice. And one of the things that I want to say before going to the discussion then is one of the things that we wanted to do was consider the effects of the transformation of persons into images. The commodification, sometimes self-commodification of celebrities, and the resulting creation and sometimes even destruction of celebrities' subjectivity. One of the things we also wanted to think about was the way in which celebrities, could they have a fixed identity, or is it that they always have to exist in relation to the series of images which are presented to the public? So to what extent are celebrities and any of us able to control or claim the images through which we are presented to the world? In order to celebrate the opening of this exhibition, we're honored to have both Indrani and Eugene Brave Rock with us this evening. I'm gonna leave the discussion mostly to them, although as they're talking, I might interject something here and there. But in order to begin, I'm gonna welcome them to come to the stage, Indrani and Eugene. And I think Eugene will introduce himself. And then I'm going to invite Indrani to say a few words about the exhibition and about what it means for her to gather these different projects in a single space. And then maybe they can also begin by talking about how they met, their initial collaboration, and then we can open up into a broader discussion. So please help me welcome Indrani and Eugene Brave Rock.
Okay, ni stu ni tsitepi, ni tumkto to tatsiki tepi. I'm very thankful to be here today, to be invited by Aaron, and to be able to represent. Very thankful to for Andrani for the work that she has done, not only for not only the beautiful pictures that she took of me, but everything else she does for the work that she's done for the community. Again, I'm very thankful that Aaron has recognized the Lenape people being here on their traditional land. I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
So wonderful to be here with you. Thank you for joining us.
Well, Johnny, you want to start talking about the exhibition, maybe?
Sure.
Tell everybody a little bit about it, what it means for you to have everything.
Yeah, it's super exciting for me to see all the works accumulated that I've done over the last decade or dozen years, because each of these projects has a really important social justice aspect. Some of them are more overt, some are more subtle, but each of them really brings together this idea of fantasy, fame, and social justice and human rights around very different kinds of topics. And so I'm especially honored to have Eugene come here today to speak with us, because I think that the issues represented in the work that we've done together are incredibly important and reflect on many of the other aspects that we were looking at in each of these very diverse projects. So while we have the Philippines and projects in Central African Republic and India and Nepal, so many places. But right here in America, we have an incredible amount of work to do for social justice and human rights, and we'd love to talk about how we can help to encourage making improvements and making things go in a positive direction and the kind of conversations that can really provoke change. So Eugene, I'd love to ask you just a little bit, because when we did this shoot together, you know, it was such an exciting moment for me. You had just starred in Wonder Woman, and getting to meet you and create an image, a series of images for a fashion magazine. You know, I imagined it was going to be we're going to have Gucci suits and you know, you do a lot of very typical kinds of fashion work, which is always fun and exciting, but you had this tremendous suitcase that you brought with pieces that were really important to you and represented who you are in many ways. And so we did this interesting mix where we represented you, how you are in your everyday life, and then also your traditional aspects. And I wanted to start by talking to you about that shoot and your thoughts about it.
It was amazing. It was nice to show both sides, to show the traditional aspect and the contemporary. For me, I think the traditional aspect, I think it was in a way it was kind of hard for me to do, just because of the ceremonial religious aspect of the things that I was wearing. There are issues in my own group of people, our own Native American societies, that kind of pointed fingers and made an issue about selling the Native American image for profit. And first of all, that wasn't for profit.
Right.
And second, for me, it was important for me. It was kind of a dedication for me for who I am. And who I am is where I come from. And I come from warriors. I come from chiefs. And for me to be able to show that and express that, and I wanted to inspire our youth. I wanted to create some dialogue. I think a lot of what has happened to us as Native American people with colonization, it's taken away that knowledge of who we are and where we come from. They think we come from the reservation. And that's not the case. We come from the earth. I mean, for me, where I come from, that's where we came from, and that's where we go when we die, is back to Mother Earth. And I think a lot of the social issues that we have in our communities are based on not knowing who they are. They have no pride. They have no understanding of where they come from. They think they come from a reserve that's broke, that's poor, that has no jobs, that's full of drugs, that's full of alcohol, that's full of all these things. And to us as Indian people, to really understand who we are, that's the total opposite of who we are. We are people that were so, you know, we had our own doctors, our own lawyers, we had our own way of life. Everything that was sacred to us was in our daily life. Every time we woke up, we give gratitude to the sun, to the things that we ate, to every step that we took. It was something that we, you know, and it's like breathing air, you know, and the trees taking, you know, the trees taking, releasing oxygen and taking in carbon dioxide. It's a give and take. And that's who we are as Indian people. And I think that's what's been taken away from us, the sacredness of who we are as people with the educational systems that were forced upon us by government. I think it's a very, and to be honest, it's still happening to this day. It's really sad to be in the 21st century and still fighting for the little that we have left. And but at the same time, that image, it shows that we're still here. It shows that, you know, there's so much power in that photo. Thank you. And I wanted to do it. I mean, for me, it honors where I come from, my elders, but it also inspires our youth.
Well, I think it inspires all of us, and I think that what's lost is for society as a whole. I think there's so much that we can learn from those traditions, from those ways of life, from the stories that you've been sharing a few of them with me. And I think that learning more deeply about how to live in harmony with the earth, with other peoples, you know, those are skills that we've come to realize now, a little late. For society as a whole, we've come to realize that we need those desperately. Mm-hmm. And where can we go to learn but to go to the people who've experienced in so many ways and experimented and found ways to live in harmony. So I find it really inspiring.
It's been
I think you had told me that the image was destined to a magazine called Dress to Kill.
Yes.
And then, in fact, most of the people who are presented in that magazine wear very fashionable suits, Western clothing, and so on, so that it was a quite strong statement for you to decide to appear in that magazine in this costume, because, as you say, it's a way to honor not only where you come from, but also your ancestors.
First of all, it's regalia, not a costume.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But it's something that bears the traces of that history, I mean, mm-hmm. both of where you come from and also your ancestors and your elders, as you said. And so it's a very strong image to put in that particular context, right? Because it's not just a provocation, but it encourages people to rethink mm-hmm. something in relation to you and your history.
Yeah, it was really disruptive for the magazine and really interesting because they usually have someone in a suit and it's quite a conventional way of approaching.
Did you know they were going to do two covers?
I didn't. They were so excited when they saw the power of the imagery and they realized that we associate suits with power. We don't necessarily view other ways of dressing and they really appreciated that, bringing that other aspect. But from a commercial point of view, you know, you can't go out and buy that and wear it down the street. So it was also for them really interesting to explore a very non-commercial kind of, a non-commodified way of being.
For me, it also shows the balance that I keep in living in this contemporary world with also keeping my traditions. I think my traditions have made me who I am.
Right.
Definitely with the way my belief system, I was raised by my grandmother. In my language, we call it Gipitepuka, which is almost kind of like a golden child, you know, and I never really understood that until now. It's coming to me like I'm the last of a people that's dying. In my generation, my language is maybe 1 or 2% of our people speak it, if that. And but like I said, growing up with my grandmother, growing up with those traditions that I had, has made me powerful, made me who I am. It's given me the ability to believe. I think that's key in everything, is believing. You know, I'm just a kid from the res that grew up with all the social issues and you know, the belief and the structure that I grew up with, being brought up by my grandmother, has given me the ability to show that dreams that are bigger and better than the realities that surround us are possible. I'm a living example. I live in California, but I live on a farm, and you know, it's a daily thing for me to get up and speak my language to my child. There's so much in my language that, I mean, you can't even explain it in English. English is such a simple language. You can write something in English and see a truth, but you know what? You can bend that truth and turn that into a lie. Where my language is so intricate and sophisticated that no matter what you say, that's the truth. It's definite. And a lot of these truths have been taken away from us. Again, with the government school systems that were forced upon us. You know, everything that was sacred to us was whipped, beaten, and raped out of us. I mean, that's the real history of America, and they don't tell that in school. I mean, that's the social injustice that I live every day. You know, to come to Philadelphia, and I'm wondering, am I going to meet a Lenape Indian here? I hope so. I know we're still here, but for me, I don't know. There's so much in those pictures. You know, it's been nice to walk in both worlds.
Can I ask you a little bit about, because you're speaking about the importance of language, and in Wonder Woman, you were able to bring your language. And your first communications with Wonder Woman were in the Blackfoot language. Can you tell us a little about that?
So the story starts off as, I was actually working on The Revenant. I was on hiatus and I went to California for just a little vacation, and I got a call to do an audition. My first time in LA, and do you know what? I bombed my audition. I was so nervous being in LA. I walked away from it thinking, okay, well, at least I came to Hollywood one time. Took my swing, and I honestly, it was the worst audition I ever did. A month later, I got a call, very secretive. They said, the director wants you to fly to London. They want to meet you, and they want to do your costume fitting. So I get there, and I meet the director, and she says, do you have any issues being called chief? I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, those are fighting words. And she said, you know what, I understand. I totally understand. She actually went to Haskell Indian University. And she said, I understand. And she said, do you speak your own language? And I said, I do. She goes, well, based on DC comic book characters, I can't change the name of Chief, but I'll let you speak your own language when you introduce yourself. I'm like, what? Did you say DC Comics? She said, yeah, this is for the movie Wonder Woman. I was like, oh my God, wow, right on. And so in communicating with her, she gave me that power to speak my language and to also come up with the character, or to the name of the character. She said, you never have to call yourself Chief. In fact, come up with something. And so for me, I started researching Native American veterans and it was hard for me to find a first-hand story, first-hand account. I did find one, and I was trying to use his name, but I did not have the right protocols in my tradition to take his name. So I sat down and I made an offering, give tobacco back to the earth, and I prayed to our storyteller, our creator. It was Napi. You know, when I was a little kid, I heard Napi stories all the time. He teaches you what not to do by doing it, so you see the example in every story. And they even call him a trickster character. You know, in all of his stories, he did a lot of good things, but he also did a lot of bad things. That's in each and every one of us, right? And so I sat down and I put some tobacco down and I said, "Ayo, Napi." And it clicked. I was like, "Oh, Napi, that's it." I brought it back to DC. I brought it back to Patty Jenkins, and she loved it. She had to go through the ladder of the Warner Brother gods, and they all loved it. And so that's, you know what, that communication back and forth and that respect that she gave me in developing my character to be able to bring a Blackfoot God back to life. Because this generation, you don't hear those stories like I did as a young kid by my grandmother. So I created, and I didn't create, I just brought him, gave him another breath of air. And it's really started something in my community with language, with pride, with, you know, being proud of themselves and finding that power to find out who they are, where they come from. And it's for me, I think it's my legacy, is to bring back and make my language strong again. It's been, you know, based on research, Indigenous languages are becoming extinct. So there was a syllabic system that was created by a relative of mine in the 70s that's based on traditional values of even the four directions, and it gets really deep into it. But it's so intricate. There's 27 letters in the alphabet. I counted over 600 of these syllables or syllabics. But it's just, it's created a movement of remembering who we are and where we come from and why we do what we do. There's so much knowledge in our language. There's so much wisdom in our language. You know, our traditional values were not told out of storybooks. They were told by oral accounts, storytelling. And it's so powerful to me to understand that wisdom is not read out of a book. It's something passed down. We had a conversation earlier, and it's like a psychologist. Anybody could become a psychologist as long as you read that book and get the questions right. But if you haven't had that impact on your life that gives you the trauma and all the issues to become a good psychologist, you're going to be a shitty psychologist no matter how many books you read. And that's the wisdom, right? And for me, in my language and sharing that language, bringing it back to life, it's creating more stories. I'm in a museum right now translating old stories from early 1900s, and it's amazing to hear the power that our people had. You know, like, again, doctors, like, how we would heal people, how, you know, even to know the solar system. You know, people think Native American or Indigenous people are primitive. I think it's the opposite way around. I'm living a really blessed life. I live a real simple life. I don't live in Hollywood, and I'm you know what, I'm at home every day with my child. I really love California. You know, being originally from Canada, all we grow is little berries, like, they grow once a year. And in California, like, I'm looking forward to the mandarins next month, right? And we just finished picking some pomegranates yesterday off the tree. And so for me to go out there, and I'm even creating new words. I'm not making up words, but the descriptiveness of our language is how we explain things. a red fruit that has bearing seeds. That's a pomegranate. That's how you would say it in their language, or you know, it's and to be able to teach my son that, it's very, you know, it gives me so much hope for the future, for a better world, for a better understanding, a better place for all of us as human beings. You know, I think there's a value and power in humanity. It's not in the dollar bill, which everybody's brainwashed by, I think.
Well, I'm you know, talking about that power in humanity. You know, when we look at a superhero in a lot of our shared culture of film, the superhero is sort of the most powerful character that there can be. And I'm really curious about your thoughts of representing that, and also at the same time you have this, seems that you have a sense that you're representing also a way of life, or you know, and I'd love to know your thoughts on the responsibilities that you have as a celebrity, as a superhero, even in that form.
The responsibilities, you know what? First of all, my character was, you know, it's one of the first times that a Native American has been brought to light as a hero figure. Usually we're the bad guy, or we're the villain, or we're the sidekick, or we're the medicine man, or we're the, you know, coming, running out of the bush screaming, war crying, and so to change that in Wonder Woman, and you know what, it's about time we have a Native American superhero, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not just about my people. Everywhere I go in Native America, being North America, it's very, you know, it is a, every Native American can relate and say, wow, you know, you did it. Even though our tribes are so distinct and far apart, it's like I represent all of us. I've been going to the Indigenous Comic Cons, and it's been amazing. The feedback, the power that I've been given to inspire our kids, our youth, our, you know, some of them, even adults, even, you know what, even our elders. I made an elder cry. He came up to me crying, hugging me, and I made him come alive. He said, "You made my blood boil. You made me come back to life." Yes. So I mean, it's there is a lot of responsibility, and for me, that responsibility is being true to me, being true to myself, and our people, and the land, having respect for one another, having respect of, like I told you before, the give and take. Mother Earth, the yin and yang of the world, right? And it's, I feel every day, everybody nowadays, all they do is consume.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned consumption, because when we talk about celebrities, and when we think about what it means to be famous in that way, there's a certain a way that you can look at it as a commodification of the self, right? The individual is now become a symbol of something else, and become subject to being bought and sold in that way. You're part of an image, and that image is, in a way, moderating who you are. You've spoken about the upside of celebrity and the positive aspects. Are there other aspects that you've experienced as well from becoming a celebrity in that way?
Having a platform to speak about the issues that, you know, the platform alone is wonderful, to be able to come and bring forth issues of social injustice, of the real America, of what really happened. I mean, languages, you know, it's to me, it always goes back to language and being able to share that difference. You know, one of the first languages, or the language that I first heard when I moved off the res, was F you effing Indian, as an 11-year-old boy going to my first day of school. A grown man pulled up beside me, rolled down his window, gave me the finger and said, F you, you effing Indian. And not too long ago in Denver, same thing. Oh my God, you're that effing Indian on Wonder Woman. I'm still that effing Indian. But it's it's a different context, but it's it's nice to be able to share that those issues on a platform like this and to be able to make people aware of what, you know, again, first of all, again, we're not dead. We're still alive. We're still fighting. There's still a lot of issues that not only affect us, but affect, I feel like, I mean, if you guys know who Russell Means is, he said a lot of things that are true. You know, we're the guinea pigs of America. You know, put on a reservation. First thing they did was control our food supply. You know, right now, if something happened and the power went out and you had no food, what will people do? Our food supply is controlled right now with GMOs and then everything. It's kind of a scary world. But again, I think doing what I do and the upbringing that I have, you know, and having a 3-year-old son is giving me the hope of a better world, a better place. And every day, I think about it, feel it, and try to live it by giving back and having respect, communicating. You know, I think you could learn more from a blade of grass growing than you can from your phone. Just the life that blade of grass lives, getting stepped on or wind or whatever, right? And the nutrients that it gets. And, you know, I think our world is subject to, we have so much knowledge at our fingertips, but our world is dying of ignorance.
I mean, I actually appreciate the way in which you're saying these things, because, you know, I think one of the things that Indrani was just asking was the way in which when a celebrity becomes commodified, gets transformed into an image, and then has to live up to that image in one way or another, he or she can risk losing a sense of who they are, right? And then there's this question of when somebody comes to symbolize something for an audience, again, the way in which that symbolization moves that person away from who they are as well. And actually what I really loved about the way in which you were talking about yourself is that it's not a problem for you, right? Because what it is exactly that you have a sense of yourself as someone who is already in advance related to an entire community. And that community is, you know, the home from which you come from, but then also a much wider community with whom, you know, you're different from, but also linked to at the same time. And so there's a way in which someone who has that way of looking at his position in the world is somewhat buffered and protected from the risk of losing a sense of oneself, even as one becomes a celebrity and an image. And not everybody has those resources to prevent that from happening, right?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's just been stepping stones. Everything has been a stepping stone in my life. I never, you know, as a little kid, I remember watching Dances with Wolves and telling my sister, someday you're going to see me on a movie riding a horse, and she slapped me on the head and she said, shut up, right? And, but for me, it's always been that belief and just stepping stones. I mean, even negative things, you got to bring light to everything, even if it's bad, you know? And it's a lesson, a blessing. I mean, I go through those. I mean, we all go through those every day. And it's your perspective. It's your perspective on where that next step is.
One of the things that, and maybe both of you can address this, is that, I mean, so many of these projects depend on the celebrity or fame of the person in there, and there's a way in which they call attention to the project or to the issue that is being raised, and it has everything to do with the platform that celebrities can have. They're visible, people recognize them, they listen to them sometimes when they say something. Can you talk about that in relation to these projects? I mean, the role and place of celebrity in, because this is what we're trying to talk about, the role and place of celebrity in moving people. I mean, why is it, do you think, that celebrity already grants someone a platform that somebody else might not have.
It's kind of sad, though, that that's the case.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, it's... If I didn't do Wonder Woman, nobody would be sitting here listening to me, maybe. I don't know, right?
Well, it's fascinating because, you know, why do we listen to someone because we've seen them in a movie versus someone that, you know, there's, I guess there's so much noise in the social networks and there are so many voices, but by having been a superhero in this film, people are much more interested in who you are and what you have to say, but also in what you represent to them. And it's, is there a disconnect in that, or do you feel like there's a harmony for you between, you know, what you're representing when you're on the screen?
Oh, definitely. I think there's definite harmony. I always try and bring what's real to myself out. I mean, that's part of, I guess that's part of the acting, right? I mean, I always try and relate something to what I'm doing or what I've gone through or history that I've been told orally.
Well, it's really beautiful in this project that you were able to bring so much to it.
And I want to thank Patty Jenkins for that again, for the communication and respect that she had for listening to me and having that human aspect to her. I mean, I've done so many other movies, so many other projects, huge projects too, and I'm kind of like, you know, I had the opportunity to speak to the directors and be like, hey, actually, we wouldn't have done that, you know, or we wouldn't have braided our hair that way, or we, you know, to be authentic to who we are, and that, you know, if there's some moments where the director, or producer, or writer is like, you know what, this is my story, not yours, even though they're telling a story about my people.
Right, like you were saying, going to war in a scene and just wearing things that.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm not gonna say which movie. You know, going into battle, we look rough, we look dirty, we look very, you know, again, primitive, like raw. But in action, we had so much respect for life. If we knew we were going into battle, it was either to protect our family and our way of life, and that connection with life and death. We would have wore our Sunday best if we knew we were going into battle. We wouldn't be dirty, we wouldn't be wearing rough clothes, our braids would be nice and tight and ready, right? Ready to go on to the other side. And yeah, the director was like, you know what, this is my story, not yours. And so now, you know what, it's give that platform again has given me the power to say, no, I'm not doing that, heck no. And then they come back, well, what'd you do, right? You know, where before it was like, you know what, there's 100 other Indians that'll do this. We don't need you. You're going to do it or not. So now it is nice to have, you know, and I'm getting calls now. It's like, hey, what would you do? Or who could you get that could do this? Or, you know, it's nice to have that credibility.
Also in the film, when you introduce yourself in your language. Right, and it's not translated. There's no subtitle.
Yeah, I
right?
like that.
So
it was.
This is really
created an Easter egg. Everybody's like, "What did he say?" So now, like the Google Napi, it's not common knowledge, but it's out there. Where before, it's like there was nothing on Napi out there, right? And
so that was something that you embraced, that idea of creating this level of giving something but also holding something back? Was that intentional?
Well, yeah, I like the fact that it wasn't where every other language was.
Right.
It did have the subtitles. It just created a little bit of mystery, right? What did you say? Right? And you know what was hard was not being able to tell anybody about this. Not even my own, like back home, when people heard it. Like, you know what, honestly, when I go home now is when I really feel the impact of what I said and being in Wonder Woman, it's huge. As soon as I land at the airport in Calgary, Alberta, people are taking pictures or you know, and for me, it's about children going into the community and showing, you know, saying, you know what, I used to live on this street. I grew up here, you know, in a place that's almost desolate and dead end in a sense to most of the people that live there. It's tough. But to say I come from there and go back there and have that full cycle, come full circle, it's amazing. And it's, for me, it's honestly really surreal. I'm just Gene. You know, when I go back home, I'm Nappy now. So it's that communication has given me the ability to honor our elders and inspire our youth and hopefully others, you know, and I think it's happening. You know, you talk about, so since doing Wonder Woman, now I've kind of been typecast as a hero figure. So I'm getting other movie roles where I'm coming up as a hero figure, so.
It's really fascinating because you know, we were, for me, looking at that film, and I wanted to know what it was that you said, and I wondered why they didn't put subtitles so that we could understand, and I felt like maybe that there was something, you know, something complex in that decision that was made. I'm curious. Can you?
Well,
tell
the comic book world is kind of going crazy about it, right? And I think that's what they wanted. Who knows? Maybe they're writing my own superhero film. Maybe they're doing my own spinoff.
Do you feel that when you look at celebrities, in other, you know, other kinds of celebrities, and so someone like Gal, who got to be Wonder Woman, and the platform that they all have, do you think that there is a lot of power that people can use for good? Do you think it's complicated in the sense of how, you know, it's almost like a currency, celebrity, that having that access, having that ability to be heard? And how do you feel about the ways that people use that?
I think as long as you're doing it for positive things and creating awareness of, you know, I think it's great. I think, like, for me, I don't think of myself as a celebrity I've met and worked with a lot of celebrities, you know. Revenant was huge with Tom Hardy and Leonardo DiCaprio, and I just did Cold Pursuit with Liam Neeson, and you know what, they're all just human beings with you know, with their own issues and ideas, and I mean, it's, you could be the next Liam Neeson. You could be the next Liam Neeson. You know, it's for me, the fame and the celebrity part of it, I think everybody you meet, you come into contact for a reason, a lesson and a blessing. You know, it might not be significant at the time, but 20 years down the road, it might be like, oh, wow, that light bulb goes off, right? I mean, I see that happening every day in my life. My dreams are coming true every day. I'm just a kid from the res. But you know what, actually, you know what? I'm a kid from the land. I'm a human being. And it's...
I mean, we did... We took the title, the Kim Kardashian is Dead, from the Digital Death Project. I mean, one of the things, and we remarked it very quickly in the beginning, but this is a project that mobilized celebrity in order to raise funds for families with AIDS in Africa. And the fact that, I mean, it's a kind of mixed issue in some way, right? Because on the one hand, it's totally genius. The project is totally genius in the sense that they raise $1 million in 4 days for that fund. I mean, people can work months and years and never raise that kind of money to help those projects. So all of a sudden, within a short period of time, millions of dollars are raised to do that. But those millions of dollars are raised precisely because there are audiences who can't live without these people on social media. Mm-hmm. Which, so it's a kind of strange, it's what you said at some point. I didn't know if you wanted to elaborate something about it, but on the one hand, there's a real virtue in having access to a platform. It's kind of extraordinary, the access to that platform. And at the same time, there's a kind of sadness that other people don't have access to that platform.
Exactly. Right? I mean, for me, I hope that my language thrives and survives. I think that's what my legacy is. And I feel if I wasn't a celebrity, I wouldn't have the impact that I'm having. I'd be just what's this guy, crazy guy, trying to do, right? So, and it's very blessed, very thankful. And again, I think it's, what is the law of attraction? Believing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I understand that.
Well, and when you're working in film and media, it's all about shaping people's beliefs in a lot of ways too. So I think it's very interesting to come at that idea of belief from that traditional side, but also from what's happening in the everyday creation of the new myths that shape people today.
You know, that's the thing for me in language right now. I'm going up with obstacles. I'm fighting against my own people about language issues. People that have been involved in the language programs for the last 30 years, they've written dictionaries on my language based on English phonetics. And that's my fight, is with them, because they've been collecting the same funding for the last 30 years, and now I'm encroaching on their livelihood, and they're trying to fight again. But I'm at a, you know, I'm just being honest with them, and I'm saying, you know what, I read your books. I went to school, I studied your books, and I still can't read your books, but I can talk my language. And I'm not, you know, it's, and that power or that conflict is about money. It's not about language, it's not about, they're gonna lose their funding if I take their funding, right? And to me, it's not about the money, it's about language, it's about the power of our language.
It's such a big issue in the nonprofit and the social good world, is the competition between the different entities buying for those same dollars. But it's really interesting to look at that and bringing people together rather than dividing and conquering.
So I'm creating an app with the syllabics for my language, and I thought about the, you know, actually my younger brother actually can read the dictionary words really good. So I know there is different developmental learning abilities, right? And people learn different ways. And I'm not, I even brought this forward to the other people. Like, you know, I don't want to push your dictionary to the side. I still want to use it because, I mean, everybody learns in different ways and let's work together. I don't even need the money, right? It's,
yeah.
I think we'll open it up now.
Yeah, we'd love to.
So we have a little audience here, so you should feel free to ask any questions that you have. This is a kind of rare opportunity, so.
Do you feel that a responsibility comes with celebrity? A certain social responsibility?
Of course, definitely. I mean, again, representation matters. If I didn't do what was right for myself, I couldn't represent my people.
I struggle a bit with the sense of responsibility with other celebrity. I don't know that it always comes together.
Well, I think that there are so many different approaches, and what's been fun for me as a filmmaker is working with a lot of different celebrities, and a lot of them do spend time giving back, you know, whether it's authentic and something that they're super passionate about or something they just give half an hour to because they had the time to do it. In some ways it matters a lot, in some ways it doesn't, because the results can be equally beneficial to the people who need it. So I find it really exciting when people are deeply engaged and really passionate and spend years, as many do. You know, the Alicia Keys Keep a Child Alive project, she has created dozens of campaigns, really done tremendous work to save thousands of lives. So I think it's a case-by-case matter, but I think that the more we look at the power of celebrity and its complexities and avoid making judgments, I think we often, there's a tendency for many to criticize and say, oh, look, this person is doing this, and they can't be genuine, and it maybe it's for some ulterior reason, and that may be, but it also may be that they are genuinely using their power for the best causes they can. So I think it's complex but interesting.
It is so complex. I mean, I've met some actors that just had a bad day, but they've got the worst reviews or made them look like a horrible person, you know, and they're just being human beings and they had a bad day kind of thing, right? I mean, it is, the power of being a celebrity doesn't always work. I mean, walking through the airport, if you're tired and and you get 10 people that want to take your picture and you don't want to take a picture and you walk away, you're going to be, you know, you're acting too good or you're, you know what I mean? It's tough. It is a tough line to walk.
Hello. How do you, as an artist advocating for a cause, make sure that you don't overshadow the cause that you're advocating for? And how do you work with, you know, years later, we remember that Kim Kardashian is dead and, you know, she worked on this project, but do we remember the cause that she was funding for?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question as well. And I don't know if there's an easy answer for that. I think that that when there's so much currency and so much interest in an individual and so much expectations, it's almost like a godlike quality that's expected from them to somehow balance the needs of not only who they're representing in that particular instance, but also society as a whole, and to not overshadow or not underwhelm, or to be educated enough. And it's complex. How do you go about it if you're doing something for raising awareness for something that's important to you? Do you have an approach that you take?
I don't know, just being honest with yourself and with everybody else. I mean, again, I don't feel like I come off as egotistical or anything like that. I'm just a human being, and I treat everybody the same, whether you're a celebrity or not. For me, it's just being genuine. Where I know a lot of people ain't. I've met a lot of actors that ain't very genuine. But for me, I've learned from them how not to be. So for me, it's every day is just a learning experience and taking it as it comes. And I think there's so many, the issues that are out there are so bigger than who I am. So I don't feel I make a difference. I mean, in overshadowing that. There's certain issues that I won't talk about in Hollywood just because I don't want to get blackballed. There's certain things that come up in Hollywood, in LA, you know, of representation. You know, Johnny Depp playing Tonto. Those kind of issues, I try and stay away from them. Or for me, my explanation is, yeah, there's a lot of Native American actors and actresses that can play the role. It should be them. But at the same point, I can look at Cliff Curtis, who's played every race in the book. And based on an actor, that's what I kind of want to do too, is to not, it shouldn't matter that I'm Native American. Just that I'm a human being, you know? And that's how I take the issue, you know? But, you know, there's certain, you know, programs on television right now where we're being represented by Asian people, or, you know, you even go back into the John Wayne days and Lone Ranger days, where the representation was, there was no representation. There were Italians playing Native Americans. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I'm very thankful to be able to represent my people and to do it with, you know what, I'll say something that, why I got the role for Wonder Woman, which was kind of, the reason why she chose me, because it was because she could feel that I wasn't whitewashed. I was genuine. I mean, and to me that meant that I was like, wow, that's the biggest compliment you can ever get.
I'm thinking about the various nuances that exist within Native American tribes in North America, and how some use different, you know, textiles and have different aesthetic decisions that they make. I guess if we're talking about image and the construction of a chief image, how do you kind of distinguish the specificity of your history as being different and distinct from other Native American tribes, and how do you kind of protect an ignorant audience from looking at you as a kind of universal figure for the Native American?
I don't think I can protect that, but I mean, I am aware of all the
differences in our, you know, we all speak different languages, we all have different customs, we all have different languages and different, you know, it's again, communication. And for me, I think there's so much to learn from everybody else. I mean, even within our, even in Native American community, even back in the day, there's a story of my grandfather going to meet up with Sitting Bull's camp, the Sioux Indians, and it was a trading. It was, you know, they ended up gambling. The story goes into them gambling. It was a fight against one warrior against another, and they were, and my grandfather won. So Sitting Bull took him back to his teepee, and he gave him a song, gave him a drum, and gave him his name. So that's what we did as communities, separate communities, was we exchanged knowledge and gifts. So my grandfather is responsible for bringing back the big drum, which we never utilized before. We had a small drum. So now, like, even in headdress style, we adapted other Sioux style, or they adapted our style, or medicines, or prayers, different things, different ways to do things. We all learn from each other. You know, people think we're all fighting each other, killing and doing all the savage stuff. You know what? That's all orchestrated. That's propaganda. It's there's so many differences that I can't go through each and every one, every different tribe. You know what would be cool though, which was an idea, was to have a superhero story that had all the Native American gods involved, from Wasagichuk to Napi to Coyote, to have all those demigods come together and save the world.
Sounds amazing. I love it. Let's do it. Fantastic.
As a chief character, there's so many different ways to be a chief. Like, our leaders today, it's kind of an insult to call them a chief. Our leaders today are the problem, and it's the lack of leadership. I can only speak for myself, and I can't speak for the rest of Native America, but you know, in my own tribe, we had our chief. He was a chief for 30 years. And that's kind of based on family, because he had the biggest family, so they would all vote for him. And it kind of turned into like a nepotism, and kind of corrupt. And, you know, that's not our style. Our original traditional style was, you earned your position. You weren't elected, you earned it. You know, and it was about feeding your people, not just food, but knowledge, culture, you know, humanity, all that stuff. It had nothing to do with greed and power, and that's all it has to do with nowadays. So for me, I just got back from Australia, and I witnessed something that I didn't think I'd ever witness. I thought it was in a dream, or, you know, in a movie somewhere. But I witnessed a leader that actually took care of his people, fed them, made them self-sustainable, created an infrastructure for themselves to for their politics, for their cultural stuff, for everything. 10 years ago, they didn't own nothing. Now they own 90%, 98% of everything in their community. He turned everything around. He bought back land. He won back land through technicalities and treaties. You know what? And what he does every day? He goes hunting every day to feed his people. You know, I went hunting with him. We got a dugong, or like a manatee, and then we had kangaroo and to know all those, you know, he's not only teaching them how to hunt, but the respect of these animals and what they have to give. You know, the oils in the dugong were used for arthritis. You know, all this ancient knowledge. You know, and his grocery store was the river. He didn't trust anything unless he didn't get it with his own hands. I mean, for me, that's a real chief. That's a real leader. Somebody that knows everybody's name from a child to their grandparents. And to have that power to influence them in a way that brings them pride and respect, and they live in the community. They don't live in a big house on a big hill somewhere. So, I mean, being a chief is a different, it's an English word that I for me, it doesn't mean anything.
I mean, I love the way both of you showcase, you know, the social justice instrumentality of images of superstardom, you know, doing good with that platform, as you said, Gene. I'm also wondering, though, you know, capitalism, you know, coming from a communist state myself into the US, that is what it is manufacturing superstardom as an exception. That this is not what you can do, this is an exception. Yeah, sometimes it can be for the good, like you have done. But most of the time, it is, you know, a superstardom, even in our social movements. Create leaders to tear them down, to tear the movement down. Or in our presidency, right? Create reality stars and make everything just a superstardom, you know, DC comic. And that creates a problem for those of us who are working in the community, who are social activists. So celebrity becomes part of the poison of capitalism. So in your work, I'm wondering, because I love how you've showcase the irony of it at some points, right? You know, that it takes the virtual death of a celebrity to make people interested in the real death of HIV. And is that shameful or ironic or, you know, instrumental because it's creating $4 million? I wonder how you've struggled with that or how you have showcased that, you know, because I see some of it definitely coming through in the images.
I think this is a wonderful question, and I think it is highly problematic. I personally believe that superheroes are responsible for some of our current political situations in the world where we're looking for a hero who can come and solve all our problems, and we're not going to ask too many questions about how they're going to do it and what are the costs and can they really deliver on the promise. And so we see that around the world where we have these sort of hero-like leaders, or at least in their rhetoric, but the realities are very different. So I do think that it's a problematic trope, but at the same time, it can be incredibly empowering to see a story or you know, just like myths of ancient times, of various cultures. I think the myths that we grow up with, the myths that inform our imaginations, also inform us of what we're capable of. And so I think how it's handled is a very delicate and very important matter. And I think that there are streams of sort of mythological storytelling where it is the every man or every woman who has, or every transgender person, who has the capability to become that hero. And that's the important part of the story that sometimes gets lost in the storytelling of our current filmmaking and storytelling authors or whatever format they're in. So I think that relatability factor and the idea that of having real diversity and different perspectives in those stories of people coming from a grassroots level and solving the problems, I think it's incredibly important. And part of the problem is that we tend to have storytellers who are of one gender and one color and one nationality. So, you know, you have this 93% of filmmakers are white men of privilege, you know, of American origin, and not to say anything against that group. I think there's wonderful people, but having that lack of diversity means that the majority of people on our planet can't relate necessarily to those characters in various ways, and it also means that story becomes very homogenous and very repeated and difficult to see ourselves in. So I think that there's a lot of complexity in the myth-making process, and whether it's for social good or for entertainment, I don't see a distinction, because I think both have equally powerful effects on audiences and on our ability to imagine alternatives or imagine ways of solving problems. So I think it's complex, but it's important to engage, and I think it's naive to ignore the power possibilities of celebrity, of storytelling, and of commercial projects as well. Whether it's a Pepsi commercial or whatever format it takes, it is going to have an influence. So as an artist, I want to be part of creating a positive influence through whatever medium I can, and I kind of have a bit of a utilitarian approach to it. It's not at all a pure approach where you could say, you know, what matters is your intention. To me, what matters is the results.
I don't think Wonder Woman would be what it was without Patty Jenkins being a female director. I think it would have been a totally different story, definitely.